And we're back. Sue and Scott back with Sharing the Burden Life, talking about humility and differences between maybe humility and humiliation. And I'll tell you quickly that that's bothered me for a lot of years, because every time I looked at these words, I knew darn well they both came from the same, from the same word and the same root. And yet, why is one so distasteful while the other is, you know, looks so good? At least on people of faith, we want to be humble, you know, not weak, but humble. You know, you can, you can walk upright and be humble. But, when we're humiliated, how do we act? And that's the key, I think, because if I can walk in humility through humiliation, I got it beat. So if you can be throwing those daggers at me and I can really, really, really be easy with them, not take them on, not allow them to push me into a reactionary mode, then I can handle your humiliation in a humble way. And that way I understand the words perfectly, because humiliation, for me anyway, is as important as humility, because I really can't have one unless I'm able to stand this one nobody wants. So although we differentiate the words, you know, being humiliated and being humble are two different things, but being humiliated is something coming from outside of me, while being humble is something that comes from inside
of
me.
I never thought of it that way, yeah.
So, you know, that's actionary on someone else's part, the humiliation, while the humility is totally action on my part. How do I react to that thing over there? So that's been my personal lesson for the last number of years, but this year it kind of came home, and I think that's the first time I was able to articulate the action being, you know, put together by somebody outside of me as opposed to inside of me, because humiliation is coming at me where humility is coming from me. So that's,
when I think of humiliation, I think of a crushed eagle, right? A wounded spirit, in a way. I think of embarrassment. I think of shame. Those are some of the words that pop up in my head when I think of that. Maybe because I've lived in that kind of lifestyle for a really long time, and I've lived that. And, you know, it would be horrible to be exposed to my lies and my mistakes. And so I kept them hidden. I kept a lot of things in darkness. And, so for me today, you know, mistakes are just mistakes, and they're just faltered, and they're just, part of my journey of learning how to, you know, grow and learn stuff. And I think the other thing too, when I think of that too, my identity has changed so much. My identity and my worth used to be in what you thought of me. What the image that I, like, and I think I've talked about this before. What is it I want everybody to know about me? That's really not the real true self of who Sue is, right? You know, it's, my approval doesn't come from what you think of me. My approval comes from what I think of myself and how I feel, how content and confident I am within of who I am today. And my identity, I always say this, I had such an identity crisis for so many years, and my identity now comes from God. I know who I am, right? And so, you know, despite me making mistakes, we'll go to the little the Coleman stove issue with my son, right? Like, I'm able to go, okay. I didn't do, I kind of faltered. I didn't do the greatest job at handling that situation in the moment. And I'm okay with that. I really am okay with that. Doesn't mean that I'm a bad mother. Doesn't mean that I got trucker mouth all the time, potty mouth, I call it potty mouth. Doesn't mean that I'm abusive towards my children. Doesn't mean that, you know, I'm a raging lunatic who loses it every 5 minutes over something so simple. It just means I faltered, and I'm able to do that today. And I think it's because of, there's so much love in my heart of who I am today, and that comes from God. And, you know, I was talking to somebody about forgiveness versus, you know, I've been forgiven for so many things, right, in my life.
We all have.
I have been forgiven for so many things. And when I think of, I would hope that I can extend forgiveness to other people when they falter, when they make mistakes, right? Because I know what it feels like to be the worst of the worst of the worst, right? And I know that Jesus knows that, right? And he paid it all for me, you know?
You know, that's interesting. The striking out the Coleman stove is excellent, by the way, because I'm just, you know, my brain's always working overtime on different things. Sometimes I go blank. But anyway, forcing that stove, and I know exactly what you mean, trying to get everything fits. It's like a vacuum cleaner when you want all the things to fit in a little compartment, but you're in a hurry, you know, and all that stuff. But putting it, the interesting thing is, you know, you have the solution because you know how to put the thing in there properly.
Yeah.
You know.
My way is really good, Scott.
But you know what? No, but you know what? I think it's it's the anger is really like I can experience it for myself. It's the anger at me for not being in control of him.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. And I don't have any right. You know, I don't mean that you, but I don't have.
What do you
any
mean?
Right
I'm his mom. No, I'm only joking.
To control anybody,
no, of course not.
You know, unless it's an infant, it's another story. But you know, but why does it just happen? Even though I have no intention of, and so in other words, it's inward directed. Even though I'm throwing it out at you, or you're throwing it out at your son, you know, like so. The remorse is. You know, is almost misdirected too, but you know, because we need to feel sorry for ourselves. Not sorry, but we need to feel, what is it, compassion and mercy for ourselves before we worry about him even, you know?
Well, it's funny because when you were talking about the uncomfortable, now that you're breaking down my scenario with a Coleman stove and I'm standing at that picnic table with my son in the moment. Well, he wasn't doing it my way, right? Wasn't doing it the way that it would fit in the box with all the parts properly.
Yeah.
Having said that, had he did it the way I was telling him to, it would have fit in nice and smoothly. But having said that, it was my uncomfortableness of standing there, watching him, wanting to do it his way, thinking his way was going to work, and it wasn't going to work. And the more I kept telling him, it's not going to fit. It's not going to fit. And he kept trying and ramming it and stretching the box and the parts were flying around. I was really uncomfortable in that moment and I wanted to him to stop and he wasn't. Listen, my son is 16. He's really at that age where he's trying to get his own identity.
Yeah.
He's trying to figure himself out and I got to let him. Figure it out.
Yep.
You know, I gotta let him figure that stuff out. You know, we had some really good conversations over the holidays. He's doing some things that I don't want him to be doing. Yep. He's 16 almost now. Yep. He's hanging around with people that are doing all the same thing young teenagers are doing nowadays.
Yep.
You know, I can talk until I'm blue in the face. He goes, Mom, you gotta trust me. You got to trust me.
Right.
You got to let me figure this out. It's not that he's making bad, horrible mistakes. He's being a total adolescent. And you know what I was so grateful for? Just the fact that he's doing things that I don't want him to do, and I don't want him to do those, and I want to change the outcome, but I didn't because I know he's going to do it. Me nagging is not going to change the outcome. But I was really grateful that my son was able to talk to me about that stuff.
Yeah. Well, actually, the fact that you guys can converse the way you're talking is so far beyond. That's because of your training and, you know.
And you know, it's funny, and I'm not bashing his dad, but his dad's very reactive.
Sure.
And he was really pissed off at me because I told his dad that he was doing something that he didn't want me to tell his dad. He goes, why did you tell my dad? Why didn't you come to me? You know. And I, you know what? I knew his dad was kind of probably going to go off on him, and he did go off on him.
Yeah.
And so I feel a little bit of sense of confidence that my son is willing to share that. Do I like it? No, but I like the idea that, you know, he's willing to open up with me. And I am uncomfortable with that, but you know what? I need to be his mom, if you look at the Coleman scenario and him not doing what I wanted him to, and look at this beautiful conversation we had in the car of him doing something that I don't want him to, I was uncomfortable with the uncomfortable, and I was being the mother that I know I can be. I was being the mother that he knows I can be, and I was being the woman and the godly woman that God knows I can be in that moment. Yeah. So that was beautiful.
Yeah, so like when you look back, it was good. Yeah, no, I think that's what's important. Like, it's not much later. Only a day sort of thing, and you know there's a lot of great stuff came out of that. So, I mean, that to me is everything. And that's what this whole recovery thing is all about in my mind, and that people get it out of your mind that it's just drugs or needles or, you know, we all have to recover from these defects of character.
Yeah.
And that's where we're specifically pointed this month, you know.
Yeah.
And as we talk on humility, I pulled out Stephen Arterburn's piece, another one on he has a 365 day called Take Your Life Back, One Day at a Time. And day 204 would be July 24th, which for us is day 24 in step number 7, you know, the equivalency of the month and so on. So, but anyway, in this one, I'll just read a bit of it to you and see the question I want to get to here. But there's one place that each of us can go to truly be alone, and that's our hearts. And when these guys who wrote this are talking about their hearts, they're talking about the center of where the feelings come from and go to and so on. And we also know that Scripture says, you know, hearts are deceitful above all things, too. So so what we take into that thing, you know, whether that's a heart computer, I was thinking about this morning, whatever we take into that heart computer and whatever we fill it with, that's what's going to come out of it, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're exposed daily to a lot of evil, a lot of demonic stuff, and a lot of good stuff, you know. And I mean, every little piece of this internet can be absolutely wonderfully positive, and it can be absolutely wonderfully destructive. So, I like to think of, you know, what goes in and comes out is a true expression of who I want to be, as opposed to maybe who I could be, you know, negative or positive. So just the reality. I want the reality to come out nice. And the same with these radio shows. I just want the reality to come out. I want people to come out and say, yeah, you know, I blew it, you know, for 5 minutes, but man, what a lesson. You know, like, that's the stuff that helps people grow. It's not... Like that story. I came once to a room, heard something. That's all I needed.
I never came back.
No, I don't either. I don't want to, because coming back to the rooms is my study place. You know, that's where I learn things. And anyway, so it says to truly be alone, it's our hearts. The Bible says no one else can fully feel the joy or pain that each of us carries inside of us. And each of us is responsible for the condition of our hearts. And that by virtue of what we put in there or let go in there, it will determine what comes out of it. But I think we've got to go one step further. And, you know, we talk of meditation now and then, where I think meditation is the ability to fully let go of all thoughts. So, in other words, as they come and go, and thoughts do. They come and they go, and today I like to explain it or use the analogy that there's a whole bunch of little boats on a meandering stream, you know, going by, and going at a reasonably peaceful rate, but moving, not stopping. And each boat has a thought in it, you know, and as the boats come by, as they come really close to the place in the stream where I am, I can see them more and more clearly, and finally, when it's right here, I can see it perfectly. I know what that thought's all about and blah, blah, blah. Now, what I do here will determine what gets to stick around, what gets to stick around and create bitterness and so on and so forth, or I just let it go. Now, in full meditation, for me, the real art is letting go. So, in other words, if I back it up to this scenario where, you know, things are coming toward my heart and feelings are coming toward my heart, you know, and what's good and what's bad, well, I'm not even going to do that at this point. Those little boats full of thoughts as they come by, I'm going to let them all go, because I'm looking at a way right now to rest at a soul level. So I don't want thoughts of any kind, good, bad, indifferent, or anything, to really be coming into my existence now. It's not on my tabletop. It's not on my desktop. I'm not going to take it and work with it and share it and all that stuff. I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm going to let it go. So the art of letting go and letting God, if you will, but just the art of letting go part is, to me, being able to let those thoughts go right on by, because every thought I grab, every little boat I stop, tends to become an impediment or something that'll hold back other things. And so what'll happen is, I'll grab this one and I start thinking about it. Well, if I did this differently or that or whatever. So I'm holding on to this. Meanwhile, the stream's going by and other things are getting by, and some are starting to...
Your boats are getting jammed up.
Starting to get jammed up.
I'm thinking of a dam.
There's a dam made out of boats, which are my thoughts, and now I'm really in a mess.
You're overwhelmed.
I don't know how to free. What space do I free first? And every time I think like that, now I'm not letting anything go. I'm worried now, and now the boats are piling up everywhere, how am I going to get away? I think I have to just leave this dam and run away, you know, and then I'm in a real mess up. That whole art of letting go, so we get back to, you know, what's in our hearts and what's not. Well, if I practice this letting go and then I have planned times of looking at different thoughts or so on, you know, then we'll sit down, maybe we're talking like this, and we'll talk about, well, how do we deal with, you know, a certain defect, it be an anger or a jealous or envious issue or whatever it is, doesn't matter. Then we sit down, we deal with it purposefully, do what we can about it, and so on. And so we end the conversation and go back to the art of letting go, so that life can be truly peaceful, as though we're riding on the stream with all kinds of thoughts all over the place, but we're not holding any up, you know, and our hearts are free, you know. So it's kind of a big concept, but I thought, you know, it's powerful. Like, there's so many things come back to the same thing, not to hang on, learn how to detach, you know, love your son with all your heart and so on, but, let him go. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that. Yeah, he's 16, mm-hmm. but yeah. that's almost a determining time. I remember with my guys that are 16.
Yes.
They got rights and everything. Yeah. They're even spelled out legally now. So.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you respond to the idea that each of us is completely alone in our hearts? Does this feel like a good thing or a bad thing to you? And why? You express anything on that, Sue?
Well, I'm thinking of a couple of things. I want to talk about meditation in a minute, which we'll go to, because I interpret as meditation a little bit different than you, and I have a hard time letting go. So we'll go into that in a second. But you know, when you're reading that, I'm thinking of the condition of the heart, right? And what is the condition of my heart? And you know, sometimes I just have to be still and really get tuned into what's going on. What am I feeling? What am I thinking, right? Because my whole life I've avoided feeling, right? And, you know, your thoughts lead to your feelings. I'm not really sure which one comes first. Is it my way of my thinking that causes me to feel a certain way, or is it the way that I'm feeling causes me to think a certain way? I'm not really sure. I don't have that all figured out. But I know for me, you know, as long as I'm doing, I'm not really feeling it. Right? And I'm gonna bring up my own personal experience yesterday. Yesterday was my birthday. I came back from camping and, you know, I did a bunch of hours trying to put everything away. I don't know what's, you know, I'm gonna put this out there. You know, birthdays, I think, make you really self-centered. They do. It's all about me. It's my birthday. Everybody's supposed to acknowledge it. It's supposed to be special, you know, an extraordinary day. Because I'm so good. Sorry, shut up, Scott. No. But here I am at home, and I, you know, I'm not in a significant relationship. So, you know, birthdays are hard when you're not in a relationship. You're on your own. My kids are grown up. You know, my 16-year-old does not, he's at the skateboard park. So I'm putting my stuff away. And, you know, as the day progresses, I'm thinking, what am I going to do for my birthday? So part of me is thinking, you know, I'm feeling a little bit self-centered. I'm feeling a little bit of self-absorbed, a little bit in a pity party. Yeah. Not overwhelming or nothing, but those are my feelings. But I'm not really attuned to my feelings. I'm just having these thoughts going on in my head, right?
And you're alone.
And I'm alone. Yeah. I'm alone cleaning, and I'm doing things, right? So as the day progresses, I think to myself, well, you know, worst case scenario, I'm going to have a nice shower. I'm going to go out. Mm-hmm. You know, if my kids don't want to do anything, I'll go and have dinner. Who wants to have, listen, I'm thinking I'm a loser if I'm going for dinner on my own on my birthday, but I thought I'm going to go for dinner and I was probably going to go to a different meeting. I got a car, I'm single, I'm fine. I can do whatever I want to do. What's the problem, right? Go and make your good day. It doesn't matter, right? That's what I was thinking in my head. But really, I ended up going to be with my daughter and my parents. My parents didn't know I was back. It was as soon as they found out that I was back from camping early. They went out of their way to come and take me out for dinner. My daughter wanted to go for dinner with me. We went and got her nails done. But during that whole day, all that thing was going on, and I wasn't really attuned to what I was feeling. I had all these thoughts. At the end of the night, I did some writing around. I do a step 10 at nighttime, and I did some writing around it.
Tell people what that is.
Step 10 is a personal inventory, right? You know, I review my day, and I look at my day, and I look at what was bothering me during the day. Did anything come up for me? And I had a lot of fear of being alone on my birthday.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And underneath, forget about just knowing who wants to be alone on my birthday. Underneath that fear is that core issue that says, you know what? I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Nobody's around.
Yeah.
And that's a big fat lie.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is my parents didn't know I was going to come home, so they didn't really plan anything, right? You know, my daughter was lovely, such a gracious girl. She says, Mom, do you want to go out for your birthday? Maybe we'll get together. And that's where the idea birthed for us to go out for dinner. But, you know, when it was all said and done, when I wrote about it, it was just those insecurity. I was feeling lonely and didn't want to be alone on my birthday. And you know what? And the humility underneath that, that's perfectly normal. Nobody wants to be alone on their birthday. And so, you know, so that's where I went with all that stuff. You know, that was the condition of my heart yesterday. And sometimes I wasn't even aware of it when it's going on. Yeah. It's only when I can sit back and I pause and I reflect. And it was so nice last night. Yeah. You know, I was with God all day yesterday, but it was so nice to really just pause and reflect and really get at the heart of what is the condition of my heart. And that was the condition of my heart yesterday. At the end of the day, I mean, by mid-afternoon, I had a beautiful day because I was with people. But that's what I was, the condition of my heart during the daytime. And I wasn't aware of it when I was in it. Mm. And it's so beautiful that I have a loving God and I have family and I have the truth.
Yeah.
The truth is that I'm worthy and I'm valuable, whether it's my bloody birthday or not. It doesn't matter whether it's my birthday. Right. My children love me. My family love me. They want to be with me. They couldn't have done it yesterday. No big thing. That's the truth of the, I'm still special. I'm still important, right?
Yeah. Amen.
You know?
Yep. No, you're on perfect track. You're a good example.
Yeah.
And with your wonderful example, I think we're going to get Jada maybe give us a song out in this beautiful town of Stouffville where we need a support meeting, folks, a sharing the burden meeting where people can come and just say, I am me and I got this and I got that. I don't like this. I like that. I like you. I don't like her. Whatever. And no one's going to tell you what to do. So help us start a sharing the burden meeting in Stouffville. Jay, all yours.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. Here's a song that's fitting for the show. It's by Tim McGraw. It's called Humble and Kind.
You know there's a light that glows by the front door. Don't forget the keys under the mat. When childhood stars shine, always stay humble and kind. Go to church 'cause your mama says to. Visit grandpa every chance that you can. It won't be wasted time. Always stay humble and kind. Hold the door, say please, say thank you. Don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie. I know you got mountains to climb, but always stay humble and kind. When the dreams you're dreaming come to you, or a chip, and here's why. Bitterness keeps you from flying. Always stay humble and kind. Know the difference between sleeping with someone and sleeping with someone you love. I love you, ain't no pickup line. So always stay humble and kind. When those dreams you're dreaming come to you, when the world
need a root beer popsicle. Shut off the AC and roll the windows down. Let that summer sunshine always stay humble and kind. Don't take for granted the love this life gives you. When you get where you're going, don't forget, turn back around. Help the next one in line always stay humble and